Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. Here it's time now for the Tuesday Talk Show on KAJO Radio. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour. Then you're certainly welcome to call. The number is 541-472-1270. Interestingly enough, that's just our AM frequency, 1270. Just, you know, a little self-promotion there never hurts. At any rate, when you hear the sound of the phone, sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest directly. Our guest directly, dear, it is the fourth Tuesday of the month right now. That means we have county commissioners, two out of three here with us, John West and Herman Bartschiger. Gentlemen, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Thank you for joining us this morning. A little overcast out there here in this beautiful fall country.
Good morning. We got some weather change going on.
No editorial comment there, was there?
Just misspoken.
I see. Okay. All right. Let's move ahead. Gentlemen, you've got a fairly significant business session coming up tomorrow. Before we deal with that, what are you dealing with right now on a daily basis? What are your constituents talking to you about? John, what's the last phone call you had here concerning what that you can talk about?
Their property taxes went up.
Oh, golly. Yeah, I got mine in the mail, too. Yeah. They did go up 3%, just like every year.
The ones in the county seeing the 99-cent law enforcement service district hit there.
Oh, that's right. Taxes. This is the first time that has shown up on their bill.
Yes.
All right. And their comments?
For a lot of them that I've talked to, they're not happy. They went up. They're having quite a conversation with the assessor. They don't understand. A lot of people does not know when this passed. Apparently, when we only had 12,000 people vote, apparently the other 50-some thousand people weren't paying attention. Or, well, part of those are cities, so it's not really true. So it's whatever it is in the county. But
that's high math, and that confuses me, too.
Yeah. So however it is, they're not happy.
All right. Just weren't paying attention, didn't realize what was going to happen here.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a particular time to remember. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got that pamphlet in your hands, or you should have it. Hope you didn't throw it away. Read it and then vote by, what do we got, 2 weeks from today? Is that right?
Yeah, and that's a consequence for low voter turnout. It's just what happened. People didn't know. Where did this come from? Well, you didn't open up the envelope, and you didn't vote.
Uh-huh.
So, I think there's a little more momentum going on into this election. But as I... When I have conversations with people who feel that their vote does not count, I says, you're absolutely right. If you don't vote, it's not counted. So I always bring up the example of when Governor Brown first ran for a representative, I think it was representative seats, she only won by just a single digit of votes. So a small amount of votes can make a big difference. Governor Brown went on to, 25 years and politics here in Oregon, and a lot of policies that you may not agree with, but it all started just because of a few votes. So it does make a difference, and I sure hope people take that 15-20 minutes and read that voter's pamphlet, maybe make a few phone calls to people that might have more information than you know.
And keep listening to your radio for news.
Yep. And vote. And I also encourage people to take their ballot, don't mail it, take it down and to the courthouse or one of the deposits, the ballot deposit boxes. By mailing it, that's just one more thing that possibly could go wrong with vote by mail.
Just one thing.
Yes.
All right. And let's run them down here and see if I can't pull these off of the top of my head. There are at least five drop boxes throughout the county.
Yep.
There is one immediately behind the library. That's my favorite. There is one on each side of the courthouse. So on C Street and on the other side. That's D Street. D Street.
Well, no, it's not D Street.
It's C. B Street.
It's in the parking lot.
The south side.
Yes.
The south side of the courthouse.
Right.
All right. There is one on Union Avenue. And I believe there's one in Merlin at the old bank location there.
Yeah, at Ray's.
At Ray's. And there is one out in the Murphy area.
In Cave Junction, there's one, and then there's one Murphy. I think at Murphy at the by the post office.
By the post office there. All right. So those are places where you can drop them off correctly.
And one at the clerk's office.
Of course, you can always go into the clerk's office, and that's always been my station on election night. And I am utterly amazed at the number of people running into the courthouse, running right up to the door, finding it locked, and then dropping their ballots into the depository there. So.
Yeah, and actually, we've already had a pretty good turnout. Quite a few ballots have came in already. So I think there's a lot of more energy. This is a presidential election. It seems like people have been campaigning for decades. And I think there's a lot of excitement. So I'm hoping for a high turnout.
This should be a high turnout, hopefully above 60% at least, which seems to be our high watermark.
Well, I think in Josephine County, I think you might see 80s. In the 80s.
Do you think in the 80s? Yeah. What do you base that on?
Just because talking to folks and seeing the way things are going, I think the trend is way higher than normal.
I believe it is higher than normal. I would be just tickled pink to see an 80% turnout. I think everybody would.
You know, I think people in this country take voting for granted, and I've had the opportunity to travel around the world where there's places that you can't vote. Those people wish they could vote. And it's kind of saddens me to see that people don't take advantage of that. I mean, in the United States, the people are supposed to govern, and how they govern is through the ballot. And so, you know, I don't want to make – I hear the sarcastic comment, well, you didn't vote. I don't want to hear you complain. But at the end of the day, take advantage of that. Vote.
All right. We'll get off of our soapboxes here, and we'll probably climb back on once before we get off today, because it's a Tuesday Chalk Show, ladies and gentlemen, and we've got some time to fill here. In the meantime, you've got a fairly significant situation coming up in your business session tomorrow. First of all is the public hearing on the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District formation, and that's coming up for a vote also, and you've got two hearings coming up on it. This is the first one, and there'll be a second, right?
That's correct.
All right. What are we really talking about here? What are people concerned about, just other than the money coming out of their pockets?
Well, this has nothing to do with money at this point. What this is just the formation of the district, the establishment of the boundary, the assessment, and the board of directors for that fire district. Well, that's a discussion for the public to have. And not the commissioners. So the public will have that ability to start having those conversations amongst themselves, who they want to run the district, and what do they believe the assessment should be. So that will not be – all we're doing is facilitating the starting of the process, Chuck.
We're starting the process. All right. You mentioned boundaries. As I understand it, the boundary is the area of Josephine County – with a few exceptions. Can you outline what we're talking about?
Oh, it's a little more complicated from that, and it'll be amended before the end of this process. Where we started with a few years ago, there was a proposal put on the ballot for a district, and we've started kind of with that map because we've already had a lot of work in it, but there will be some amendments along the way.
All right. All that considered, certainly the incorporated cities like Cave Junction and Grants Pass will be excluded from that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, Cave Junction's already out in the Illinois Valley Fire District. Mm-hmm. So there's several fire districts, Illinois Valley, Wolf Creek, Applegate, and Williams are already established, and this is just another chunk of the county that's unprotected right now. The way the legislature are drafting their laws, they keep pointing to fire districts, and so if you don't have one, there's a possibility that it may be harder to develop your property in the future. Already with some of the, you know, with this wildfire map and all this, there's a lot of moving pieces going on right now, and we don't know exactly what this is all going to look like when the dust settles. So I'm not particularly thrilled with what the legislature has been producing. But I think I have a long history of not being thrilled with the legislature is producing.
You suppose?
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about that proposed district, and how big is it in terms of, do we have an estimator on what the population is that is not covered by a fire district here in the, here in the county?
Well, it's basically everything, I would say, from Murphy to Mount Sexton and clear out to Hayes Hill. And then everything around Grants Pass. So it's pretty good size. There's a lot of federal lands and some state lands in there that won't be part of it. And it's more isolated to properties with structures. Remember, this is a structural fire protection district. You already have a forest fire protection district by ODF. Covers all those lands that are forested. This is primarily just properties with structures. Did I get that right, John?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
All right. So if I've got a 5-acre plot that I plan to build on but never did, so there are no structures on it, that's not going to be included in the fire district.
That's how we're seeing it. And so we're going to have those discussions. That's what these public hearings are about.
Okay, so run down the dates for those public hearings. One is tomorrow morning.
And then one in 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks, yeah.
Okay, let me see. Thought I had the date here somewhere. One in 2 weeks. 2 weeks is good enough.
Yeah, it's usually we have readings 2 weeks apart.
Okay, so mark that if you want to attend. That's tomorrow morning at the Ambassador Auditorium meeting. It's underway at 9 o'clock.
That's correct.
Okay. So take your questions there or keep your questions here and give us a call right at the top of the hour news. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, and we'll continue right after this word.
What does being a nonprofit mean?
Welcome back, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right here. We have county commissioners in 2 out of 3 here. Mr. West and Mr. Bart Shiger are here with us, and we've been talking, first of all, about what's happening in the weekly business session tomorrow about the Rural Fire Protection District. And if you have questions about that, public hearing is tomorrow, or, of course, you can give us a call right after the top of the hour news at 541-472-1270. Some other things, other public hearings also on that agenda tomorrow, but those look to me like basic housekeeping situations. Is that really the case?
Yes. Yes. Those are repealing some old ordinances that aren't even in effect anymore. They don't even follow state law. And so we've been doing this for months, trying to clean up the books and trying to get stuff off that has no bearing anymore, doesn't even follow law. So,
all right. One caught my eye, and I don't know why, but it's the county code relating to golf carts. It's golf carts. What? We're not allowed to drive golf carts on the street. That's probably it.
I'll let Herman.
That's a state statute. So.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when was the last time you heard politicians repealing laws? Most politicians talk about creating them. This group, we've been repealing them for months because they simply don't apply. We don't need them anymore. And it's like gathering around the jail and stuff like that. I mean, these things, some of them are 50 years old. And so there's no reason for them to be on the books anymore. So we're repealing them.
All right. Is there a way to put an end date on some of these things, a sunset date?
Well, there's always, but this wasn't done back then when they were created. So it was a different time, a different era, and different problems, and different laws. So one of our attorneys, that's all she does pretty much is she's going through all of our ordinances and codes and stuff and see which is either, you know, contrary to statute now or no longer needed. And so we're repealing them. And like I said, when was the last time you heard that, a politician repealing stuff?
Most everybody wants to add something.
Yes.
And speaking of adding things, are there things you'd like to see added to our codes here that would alleviate things, make things better, and for law enforcement? I don't know. Talking about a fire district today. Are there other things that we need to do, in your opinion?
Less codes, less ordinances, make the people freer. That's my suggestion.
Ah, okay. All right, Herman, you're not running for re-election, so you almost got a blank check here as a lame duck.
I've always said that we're over-regulated, and one of the peeves I had when I was in the Senate is you would have an incident that something happened to one individual, and all of a sudden we need a law to stop it. And We have too many. You know, there was a book out, and I'm just lost for the name of it, but it talks about how many felonies you commit every day in your ordinary life simply because you don't understand the law. So there's too many laws, too many regulations, and we certainly need to downsize. Not saying that some regulations are important and some laws are important. It's probably a pretty good law that says that you have to stop at a red light. That's pretty good law, okay? But there's other ones.
Do people around here know that?
Yeah. But then there's other ones. I mean, we just had this incident out on the Applegate where somebody was trying to reclaim their pasture land because the blackberries encroached on them. And the next thing you know, we're breaking a law. We're breaking a law. You know, we're clearing vegetation by the riparian area. Well, blackberries are invasive species declared by the Department of Agriculture. So now you can't even get the blackberries out of your hay field. So some of those things, they just need to be gone away with. They don't make any sense. And we don't need them in our codes. So, like I said, there's some things we do, but there's a lot of things we don't.
All right. Do we have any more targets to eliminate from the code right now?
Oh, there's more.
More to come.
We're going to continue to go through them. They're just, some of these are 30-year-old.
Or more.
Mm-hmm. Or more. And, relating to septic tank sludge disposal, there's all kinds of laws and rules on when companies come and pump your septic tank, where they can take it, where it has to go. We don't need an ordinance on it. It's already addressed. And it's just, the golf cart code relating to property forfeiture. That whole thing has changed so much that 30 plus years ago when these were written, they don't even mean the same thing now in today's world. So it's just, the commissioners has made a commitment to go through the books and do everything we can to clean it up and get us up to 2024. And in 5 years, they'll all have to
do it again.
Yeah. Or sooner.
Be an ongoing situation, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, it should be. And the way things change at Salem, the way they change laws and just things, and it's just, you have to stay on it all the time, every year.
You know, Chuck, 50 years ago, the county had a lot more latitude over which laws. It was much more local control. But as the legislature creates statutes, we always have to remember that state statute trumps. Maybe I shouldn't use
trumps. I was going to say, can you use another word?
Yeah. No, that's the word. It's Trump's local law. So if we have a law and the state, it's contrary to the state law takes precedent, and then the federal law trumps that. Okay, so that's how it goes in secret. So that's just how it goes. And so, and when I look at these old laws, I said, I kind of smile. I said, even though I may not agree with the law that was 50 years ago, it showed we had much more local control. Now we're repealing it because the state has created a statute that is contrary to it. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. We're losing more and more control here at the local level. 86% of our funding now comes from the state and federal government. You go back 100 years ago, about 100% of the funding came from local government local people for local government. Now 86%. So you pay your taxes, you ship it to the feds, you ship it to the state, and then they ship it back to you with strings attached. You'll do this, you'll do that. You do this, you'll do that. And it's very frustrating as a commissioner. I don't know what this is going to look like in another more 50 years. Maybe we don't even need commissioners. Maybe we don't need counties.
Is there a situation that will make the county more efficient so we can afford to say no to some of that millions coming in?
I don't see. We're very highly dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we only take in about $5.5 million from property taxes to run the county. That's another thing most people say, we pay all these taxes. you should have plenty of money. Well, no, most of that goes to the schools.
I was going to say, look how that's distributed, because it's right there on your tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there on your tax bill. And schools, RCC and Grants Pass District 7 take a big bite.
We get about, to operate Josephine County, we get about 59 cents per thousand.
Per $1,000 if collected.
So for every $100,000, that's $59. You got a $300,000 house, do the math.
Okay.
About $180 is a tribute.
So I got my property taxes, and my total tax bill is $4,386. $846 went to Josephine County.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To run the government.
That includes the sheriff's office and everything?
No, that's just to run Josephine County government.
Government, okay.
So $2,715 went to District 7, $386 went to RCC. I mean, you add it up. Josephine County got very little, and we're supposed to run a whole county of almost 89,000 people on that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, look at your tax bill. Figure it out. And before you cast your votes, or if you've already cast your vote, salute. Good job so far. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band. The number to call after the top of the hour news that's coming up shortly is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought we're on, we'll put you on the air live. That's coming up right here on KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.
If you're living with dry...
Welcome back, everyone. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show's continuation. The number to call is 541-472-1270, and we'll let you air your question or comment directly to our guests. Once you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, we have someone whose patience we really appreciate. They call early during the news, and we hope they're still there. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guest this morning?
Yes, I do, and good morning. I'm 82 years old, and I had all of my thoughts in line until the news. And then every one of my thoughts kind of got scattered. But the bottom line is this. As I mentioned, I'm 82 years old, and it may sound like I'm rambling, but I assure you that I have lots of reasons for my concern about this fire district thing. And I agree with John West's opinion or approach that more government is not good news. I have not seen anything in my lifetime where the government gets involved and it gets better. It inevitably gets worse. And as far as the expense, now I live in the county. My homeowner's policy was canceled because I'm living in this burn or fire district. So I had to find insurance somewhere else, and it went up considerably. And I'm not kidding when I say considerably. I had even thought about doing without any homeowner's policy, especially since I have no mortgage, so I don't really need homeowner's policy. However, the thing that concerns me is perhaps being sued if somebody gets hurt on my property. I feel like I need the policy. However, let me get back to the issue of the fire district. Again, I think that everything that may start out good, it may start out like a good fire district idea, but eventually gets blown up into something more government, more expenses. I'm already paying for the fire Rural Metro. At any rate, since my thoughts have been scattered, I'd appreciate whatever comments or ideas or opinions you have about this fire district not getting blown out of shape and costing me more money. I've been retired for over 20 years. I have not had a pay raise, and the little itty-bitty cost of living increase on my Social Security gets sucked up by my Medicare. So if you gentlemen would, oh, by the way, I want to congratulate you, Mr. West. I believe everything you say, and these stupid people that are filing petitions for recall, they're out of their damn minds. And I wanted to use stronger language, but I realize I can't. So if you gentlemen would respond, I would appreciate it, and I'll take my answer over the air. Thank you.
All right, sir, your thoughts seemed organized, and we certainly thank you for your restraint on language. We do appreciate that here, certainly because we operate on a federal license. Response, gentlemen, John, he singled you out.
Well, so I appreciate the question, and I appreciate you, sir. You're one of many that we serve. And so, you know, honestly, anytime government gets involved in just about anything, it normally almost turns into a train wreck. And so that being said, this here is supposedly supposed to go and have the board, if they chose to design this fire district, and then it would go, and then you, the citizen, would vote for a 5-person panel. I have concerns with that. I have a lot of concerns with the whole thing. So I'm going to leave a lot of those concerns with for our public hearings. And I've got my reservations about how this is going to go, and I'm worried that it's not going to go the way we would like for it to actually work appropriately. So with that being said, I'll pass the torch.
All right. You're passing it to your right shoulder there. Mr. Bartschinger, want to weigh in?
Well, I think his observations are spot on. He's absolutely right. It seems like every time government gets in the middle of it. The problem we have right now, though, is we only have one fire provider from the private sector. When we had two, then we have competition. But now we have one, and they can charge whatever they want. So the theme of this is right now not everybody has fire protection. If we have a fire district, then we're going to spread that base to everybody within the district, which is supposed to lower the cost. So his fears are not exaggerated. They're spot on. They're my fears, too. The secret is citizens' involvement, who they elect, and what they vote for is for the amount of money. So it's up to the citizens. If the citizens don't pay attention and they let the bureaucrats control things, I think his fears will come to fruition.
All right. He's a subscriber to Rural Metro, so he has fire coverage right now.
Correct.
That does not exempt him from the fire district,
no,
should it pass.
No, it replaces it.
It replaces it. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
he can have both if he wants.
Certainly.
But it would replace it. So that the theory is if you spread the cost of more amongst more people. But if the citizens don't pay attention and the bureaucrats take charge, Commissioner Rest is right. It'll be, I think you used the words, train wreck. I've watched it my whole political career, and I know John's only been around for two years. He has watched how the bureaucrats are constantly trying to undermine and to run the show.
I'm reminded of President Reagan's quote for the most feared language in the English language. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Correct.
Okay. All right. With that said, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Lines are open. It's 541-472-1270. We have two county commissioners on the hot seat right now if you'd like to give us a call. And we'll continue after this word. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, the number to call is 541-472-1270. If you have a question or comment for our guest, County Commissioners John West and Herman Bartschinger in studio today. And gentlemen, let's see, off the air we were talking about, is that a county situation where we're talking about veterans' homes, low-cost housing for the veterans coming up here? That's outside of the county, isn't it?
No, it's in the city, but the county, we appropriated some leftover ARPA funds, what, $250,000 for the whole project?
Well, yeah, it started $250,000. They'd already used up $93,000, so they're only the remainder of the $157,000.
All right. Where is this and how is it all happening?
So it's the Mid-Rogue Foundation. It's an all-care foundation. And they're supposed to be putting in a 26-unit veterans village thing that they call it. And it's got 26 units. 14 were supposedly supposed to help low-income veterans, and 12 can go to anyone. But if they don't have 14, they can chip away at those and send those to elsewhere. But they said they had costs of around $10 million to build this. And that's $461,000, I think, per unit. I don't call that low-income housing. And we talked to them. We questioned them. Have you got the numbers solid? Well, no, we're still waiting to get some things back. And they've only been supposedly guaranteed $5 million from state and maybe $5 million from federal or something. But the cost could exceed in the $12-13 million range. Well, if that is the case, then the units go over $500,000 per unit. And the question was asked, well, what happens if the state and federal government doesn't have the money anymore to assist with paying part of the utilities, the rent, all the stuff that goes on? Well, they said then the person in there would have to, their rent would get raised to them. They would have to pay more. And then it doesn't become HUD low-income housing. It just becomes housing. And they said somebody else might take it over. The whole thing has, to me, has a whole lot of unknowns, a lot of, well, we don't have things sitting perfect. They said they couldn't answer a lot of the questions. And it just floors me that that's considered low-income housing when we see houses get built in a subdivision cheaper than that. 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,600 square foot house, and see it for $384 to $389. But these cost wise, $461 out of the gate. So how's that low income housing? But the other thing is, it's off the tax records for the city. City gets zero taxes. So when the people need to think about this. They're going to push on $600 million worth of property and buildings inside the city limits that pays no property taxes. So the people that are left inside the city limits, their taxes has to go up more because it's not being spread out. There's all these nonprofits, hospitals, government, county, city, you name it, all these things that don't pay no taxes. So when you need more police and fire, when the city council decides they want to pay for the homeless with your tax money, you have to pay more because all these other people don't pay any. That's just the bottom line to it.
All right. Let's delve into this just a little bit further here because the county has put in some ARPA dollars, $250,000. Did we know those numbers before the county contributed that?
So this started prior. It was called Suncrest Village, and so they were given the $250,000. All these costs, I never heard none of these costs till now. But they spent $93,000 doing all this work, and then Suncrest Village. Nope, it can't happen. It's too much of a hillside. We can't put it there. So that $93,000 just. It's gone in the air. And so the remainder, 157, is what they're getting for this new Veterans Village behind All Care up in there. And so my heart still just burns over this whole thing.
All right, with the low-cost housing, it comes off the tax rolls. It is a nonprofit. Did I understand that correctly?
All right.
And if it transitions into a situation where suddenly it's not low cost housing, when they've got these empty units, does it go back on the tax rolls?
Not necessarily.
Well, there's a loophole that we need to fix.
Yeah, that's in the city.
Okay. All right. Herman, you want to weigh in on this one?
Let's call it what it is. It's public subsidized housing.
Okay.
Let's call it what it is. It's the vision of the Governor Kotek. It's veteran preference. That doesn't mean they're all going to be veterans. Veterans have preference there. If not enough veterans show up, then they're just going to rent those houses to somebody who meets the low-income criteria. I don't know a place in this country where public subsidized housing has worked for a long period of time. It's public subsidized. That means our taxes subsidize it. It is what it is. They're doing it all over the state. And my question was, what happens if it's no longer public subsidized? In other words, there's no money to subsidize it. Then what happens? And that's where I got a lot of empty glares. So, because that's what happens to public subsidized housing. All of a sudden, the subsidies go away. And it's no longer subsidized, and things don't work so well.
One more question here. What is the threshold for low-income housing? Do we have that for Josephine County?
I don't know what it is. It's probably going to be like 130% over poverty rate or something like that. You know, they'll come up with some number. But I also brought up, and John has alluded to that, is it goes off the tax rolls. It's another chunk of property. When I was the vice chair of the revenue, the chairman, Mark Hass, and myself both understood that there's a problem with nonprofits in the state of Oregon. There's too many of them. It's too easy to get the status. And it takes too much property off the tax rolls for the counties. And he and I decided to start having some hearings on nonprofits, and we were shut down from above. So those hearings never did take place.
Shut down from above, and who was sitting above at that time?
Senate President.
Senate President. I see. Okay. All right.
So he's got a little more clout than anybody else. It's amazing how much the Senate I actually think the Senate President is probably the most powerful person in the state of Oregon, more powerful than the governor.
Really, more powerful than the governor?
Because he approves all the legislation. It's different than the speaker. The speaker has to move legislation that is proposed. The Senate President can just stick it in his desk drawer. The Senate also does all the appointments that the governor recommends. It has to go to the Senate for approval, so it goes to his office first. He doesn't like any of the appointments. He won't bring it to the floor. Governor got to find somebody else. And then he's also the person that controls the ways and means. All the money. So in my opinion, the Senate President has more power than anybody else in the state of Oregon.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're listening, and if you haven't filled out your ballot, take some of these things into consideration. Make up your own mind by all means, but certainly be informed, and you've got that voter's pamphlet there in front of you that has a lot of information in it. Dive into it, cover to cover. All right, gentlemen, we're down to about our last 6 minutes here on KAJO Radio. John, what do we need to do to move this county ahead? Is it stay the course that we're on right now?
So we need to continue to trim where we can. We just recently got rid of 24 vehicles. So we cut the insurance off. We didn't need them. Just continue to look at every single thing we can and just work together as a county and citizens instead of against each other. One thing I want to say, Chuck, is, you know, we got more rains coming. The first set of rains that hit, people didn't slow down on the corners. We seen cars turned upside down. We got more rain coming. The streets, the roads always get slick. And so I'd like to tell everybody, hey, cut her back 5-10 miles an hour or whatever. Leaves are falling. All those make roads slicker. And remember, our kids are at the schools and always slow down, but just remember fall's coming. Get ready for fall and winter's here. And so let's just get prepared and let's just hunker down together and help one another.
All right, we have one caller here. We've got time for just one quick call. Sir, you're a person, you're on the air. You have a question or comment for our guests.
Hi, I'm the same old guy that called a little earlier. Wait, let me lower my radio. Okay, what I wanted to say is, Mr. Bearchurger, why do you not want to stay as a commissioner? Because we need both conservative ideas to keep the taxpayers' money being spent correctly, eliminating some of the laws, like you said, that you would do that don't apply anymore. So I would try to encourage you and Mr. West to stay together.
All right. Thank you for your call, sir. I'll let them respond on the air. Herman.
I spent 8 years in the Senate. When I got elected to the Senate, I'd say I would do two terms. I did that. When I was asked to run for the commissioner by many people, I said I'd do one term. That's 12 years of public service. I think I have put my time in, and I've never believed that a public servant should be make it a career. And I've never believed that. I didn't believe that before I went in the Senate. I still don't believe that. So I think, based on my beliefs, I think I have put my time in, and it's time for me to return to the private sector and let somebody else put their time in.
All right, there you have it. Once again, gentlemen, we've got about 2 minutes left. I had John on earlier. Any further comments, Mr. Bearchurger? Yeah, about 2 minutes.
Well, I think as far as Josephine County, I think the number one priority for me, it has been for the last 4 years, is efficiency, because I know the cost of doing business is going to go up, and I know that the revenues are going to diminish, not to zero, but they're going to go down. So that means to maintain and deliver the same services we are today in 5 years, the only way to do that is to become more efficient.
All right, there you have it. John, final note?
Sun's still shining out there, and
it's up there above the clouds.
Help your neighbors with their leaves. Help your neighbors, each one of you, and everybody keep your head up and stay positive through this campaign time.
There you have it, gentlemen. Thank you very much. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO. Stay tuned. News lies just ahead after these important messages.